Paddock is a training and exercise space for sport, education, and performance. Each week, we look to grow ideas and innovation through conversation from beautiful Auckland, New Zealand. Cool. Welcome to this week's On the Paddock with Daryl Parkin. Thanks for hanging out at the Paddock. Daryl is another senior lecturer at the School of Sport at Manukau Institute of Technology. He has a master's in educational leadership, postgrads in health science and sports and leisure studies. Very, very keen on health promotion, outdoors education, and management and leadership. I'm really happy to have Daz and all his experience. He's been with the School of Sport for a great amount of time, up around there about 18, 19 years, I believe. He's our go-to man, great bloke, go-to man to actually get things across the line and just nut out some great ideas, especially around growing students and growing student leadership, which is gonna be our conversation today. Daryl, thanks so much for coming around to the Paddock and joining the conversation. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, my friend. Good. And hello to all your viewers.
Hey, did I get your intro right? Or would you want to add something or tell us a little bit more about your background?
Yeah, no, I think that sums it up, right? It's been a big journey. I've been here at MIT for about 19 years and been through various roles in that time, but still the passion and the fire still burns, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't be in this space for as long as we have been. And I think it's about right. I've been through a number of courses of sport management, and you're right, with sitting with the outdoor space and the leadership, and that's kind of where I'm sitting at the moment.
Hey, you, I like that you said that there's that passion and that drive that's still alive. I mean, we're exactly the same age. You look a lot younger than I am, and probably a lot jovial. And I'm putting this on live. But what keeps that passion alive? What keeps that passion alive when we're involved in education and in sport education specifically, which is our background?
Well, it's always people, right? It's always people. Like that, every year is different. We get the same drive. You know, to be honest, Brian, when I was young, like if I was to, you know, look all those years back and look and say that I've got my master's now, then I would have laughed, right? I would have cracked up and fallen off my chair, because to be honest, like education wasn't anything that was discussed in my household. I went to a high school that didn't hugely appreciate, in my opinion, didn't hugely appreciate nurturing students to go on and excel. It was more of a drive to put you into trades rather than getting into higher honours. And we didn't see many people in my year or anything go on to university. There was a few, but not a huge amount. And the conversation around, to be honest, and the conversation around my household wasn't around education either as well. You know, it was more like, well, what are you going to get into? And it's expected that you're going to go into a trade, or just, you know, as long as you stay out of trouble sort of thing. And so I left high school pretty disenchanted by education, to be fair. Like very, very disenchanted. And I was like, it's not for me. I'd done 1 year at MIT and then failed. And then I was like, oh, whatever. And I worked for a year in the supermarket, and then it was probably around the time where, and I'll never forget this conversation, my dad hands me a piece of paper and goes, here, apply for this. And it was a Camp America thing. I was 19 years old, and he said, and it was literally his way of saying, get out of the house, because I'm sick of you. Yeah, and I never forget the conversation, right? Because I ended up just going, well, I've got nothing else on the cards. I'm going to go for this. And then I went to America, 19 years old, first time in San Francisco, looking around, first time out of the country, and I was walking around there backpacking on my own, and of course my parents were probably a little bit nervous, but I got out there with, you know, a few hundred dollars in my back pocket and worked in the summer camp, and ended up staying there for 4 years. And it wasn't until, you know, back and forth in New Zealand, and then it wasn't until later on, then I really appreciated the education, really appreciated people and appreciated passion. And so anyway, back to the, you know, why I stay on this job is because I probably see a lot of myself and a lot of our students, to be honest. I see a lot of people who are very disengaged from, or have been disengaged from education, because we know the school system doesn't work for everyone. And we know that because we get a lot of these students through through in many forms and shapes and forms, you know. So it's about trying to find what makes them tick is probably what really excites me about people. Trying to find out what buttons to push, that light bulb moment. And, you know, all the educators talk about their light bulb moment, right? And you see those light bulb go off in students, and the conversation come out from just a simple, sometimes, you know, I've done a huge amount of planning and the conversation doesn't even go that way, but then I've done a little bit of thing, if you ask the right question or you ask the, you know, you push the right button, you can see the light bulbs going off in the students, and go, that's cool.
Yeah.
I suppose it's something we're trying to replicate, yeah.
And that's actually really cool to hear. I just wrote down something that you said, because it's a conversation that I'm constantly involved with schools and young people, is that back in your days, your school actually was pushing more kids to go into the trades and not necessarily education. And it continues to be a strong driver in many educational environments for our young people, especially for our Pacifica and Māori students, to just get pushed into that trades bucket. You know, that's a category that we're pushing our students into, and not necessarily to achieve or not to achieve higher education in that traditional sort. You experienced something similar. You were in an environment that, again, was also pushing that trade and not necessarily education. Looking back, and like you say, we get to work with young people that might have a similar experience with education like what you had when you're in high school. What's that message? What's that message in regards to showing youth the possibilities that are out there? And the possibilities, because I know a strong background and master's level study that you have is on educational leadership. What's that message for youth in regards to the different pathways that exist, you know? It's not only trade, especially when you're so directed into just one direction. I mean, yeah, you're in this type of school, you're this type of student, that's it. And actually, yeah, there's a lot more out there.
Yeah. No, there's plenty out there. I think well, education's come a long way, right? When I was doing my master's, I done this. My research took me into this. I've always been interested in student leadership, and when that's good. I know we're going to have a conversation around that later on, but since then, you know, when my research took me into the kind of space where, you know, students are now seen as customers, consumers, blah, blah, blah. So what that's led us into in terms of tertiary environment is that we're all competing for numbers now, right? We're competing between other polytechnics, we're competing against universities for numbers. And so what that's led to is a space where now polytechnics and universities are going out to students, and they're going out to exploit what they have to offer to the students. I think there's plenty of opportunities for all schools that have been reached and touched by, you know, by the likes of social media, platform marketing, the student school representatives that go out to schools, liaisons, the career advisors in schools. My advice is really to keep options open. You know what I've done in the end? I left my school, in fact, I left my degree, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. I had no clue. And I knew it was around. I'd done this exercise when I was probably towards the end of my degree. I might have even passed my degree. I'd done this training course. And it was a one-day course, and it was about career definition. And one thing it got me to do, this program got me to do, was just write down what I enjoy about work. Like what would my ideal career be? Okay, so I started writing down what I enjoyed about doing, you know, like what I would expect to see. And I wrote down things like, you know, I like working with people. I like working in a training environment. I like kind of inspiring, being in a position to inspire, to lead people. And then I wrote down on the other side, what don't you like doing? And I think the first thing on my list would be like office work, sitting at a desk, too much computer work, paperwork, stuff like that. And literally in that moment, a light bulb went off, right? And we went, all right, cool. Because now I had a kit set full of traits where I wanted to go. So I literally took that and went, cool, which job fits this package?
Yeah.
You know, which job looks around this? So, you know, my recommendation to people who are looking for work and looking for a career and looking for inspiration for their careers is to maybe do a similar exercise, you know, like just jot down what do you want to do, like what are certain traits that you feel you might be more appropriate and kind of moving towards, and then do the same thing with things that you don't, and then it gives you a chance to move ahead with the kit full of, you know, just basic words or factors or traits or even job descriptions that may suit, you know. And then because you have no idea what's out there, and for me it was sport, because sport ticked all the boxes. I had no idea what I wanted to do in sport. But the good thing about this industry, right, it's like it's got so many transferable skills that you can go from recreation, because I started in aquatics and I went from aquatics to recreation to fitness center. And this is all in the space of me doing my degree. And I went, oh, wow, like these are all different roles, but they're all the same in many respects.
Yeah, what I find interesting as well is that it does also require a good level of maturity to sometimes look at what your true interests are and what you're really not interested in. So you can do that reflection process that you have had a chance to do. Do you think, and I know that many times, older students are afraid to go back and study. After you came back from the States and you went in to do your degree, do you think it helped going into being a bit older than the 18, 19-year-old to go into study?
100%. 100%. I would never have survived a degree had I come straight out of school. I would never have a chance to survive school. Like, I was literally my time, right? Like, I remember clear as day, I was sitting on the bank of this... In the States, and we're with a friend who was French, and we're just chilling out, and then it was like a light bulb moment, right? You know, I knew I was ready to study, because I knew I had heaps of experience. I just didn't have anything on paper, and I knew I had more to offer. Had I gone straight from school, straight from school to work, then I would have struggled. But that's me, and I know a lot of people can go straight from school to school, and because it's a different kind of school, it's different kind of opportunities, but it's a for me, it just, I think that maturity just gave me time to reflect on what I was doing, and it gave me that drive. You find that with a lot of mature students that we teach now, Brandon, you know, is that you know, that they seem to have more reflection tools. They may not be the most academically smartest ones in class, but in terms of reflection, the assignments come off stronger.
Yeah.
Because they have more kind of world knowledge, world view. Not saying that it's not necessarily a chronological thing. It's not necessarily because they're older, but they're more mature. So you can get, and we've had students that are younger that have also had that same world view because they've had the experiences outside, right? They've been in different environments that have kind of enhanced their learning in some other way, whether it be in outdoors or whether it be living in different country schools, or whether it be, you know, different environment or different household dynamics.
And that's really interesting. I mean, every student's different, but it's actually really good to hear how for older students, the students are in their mid-20s. One of the chances I've had over the past few weeks is to touch base a lot with rugby players, that they're in their mid-20s, late 20s, and thinking of whether I can study, am I too old to study, can I do it? And it's actually it's something that they can do, and I think you've touched on the key word there, it's experience. I mean, younger people, they're sometimes very in tune to study because that's what they've been doing, they want to study, and it just fits in perfectly well. But when you're older, it can fit in perfectly well because the experiences are such an important factor to that learning and to that reflective process that way that you've been talking about. And I know that's a big part. That's a big part about your approach to teaching and your approach to sport education, which is our field in the background, is about generating experiences. How would you explain the value of generating experiences through the process of learning for either younger or older tertiary students, so they can actually become stronger at the end?
So I think it comes down to my background, my interest, the real strong interest is in leadership, right? And it's and it always has been, you know. It's always like, regardless of whether you see yourself as a leader or not, leadership is actually a huge component of learning, is because it's what it requires you to do is step up and take a lead. Okay, but not underestimating the people inside your space as well, because it also requires people to also step up and kind of see you as a leader and kind of acknowledge that as well. But I think and the thing is with leadership, leadership you can't learn in the classroom, guaranteed. Like you can learn about leadership in the classroom, but you can't learn leadership from sitting down listening to someone talk about leadership, right? Like you can, you know what I mean? So you can't learn to be a leader in that space. So experience is hugely important, you know, because it's gonna get you to do, it's gonna get you to learn one thing about yourself, second thing about others, you know, and third, it's gonna probably teach you your limitations inside a certain space as well. So I think having the experience to is a big important key factor in terms of learning, because it's gonna teach you about how you can tackle situations, how you can address problems, how you can step up and be resilient, you know, and because one thing we all know is that when you're studying something, you know, I'm in my second year studying te reo. I've done my postgrad or master's, but I'm doing te reo my second year of my studies. I'm struggling, man. And so and if I'm struggling, then I know, you know, I've studied for a wee while, but I know, and I, so we all know, like you and doing your master's, just going through your master's and now, you know, moving on to your PhD, is we all know that to struggle, to study takes something, to learn takes something. And I think to get the experience to be able to work, to learn about yourself, I think it's a huge important factor to be able to develop your resilience, to be able to manage your time, you know, work at your time management, to be able to develop yourself as a learner, and then eventually maybe even a teacher, because eventually if you, we have that sort of kind of trainer model, you know, that big mentor, big brother, little brother kind of model, and we know that sort of kind of role is hugely important, not just for teaching, but for learning as well. You know, when you become a teacher, you can learn so much more because it's instilled so much more deeply in your experiences.
I agree. I mean, well, we share a similar philosophy, and that's why we're part of the same school. But you're absolutely right. I mean, just this morning, I still have a live group chat with two of the boys that we went overseas on a learning experience a couple of years ago, and that Tuakana model that you're talking about is still there in regards to that continuous learning, even though they've left our space. There's still that sharing where I'm learning from them as what I would be called the mentor, but they're still learning from me in those exchanges, and that's quite strong, and I really enjoy that about our teaching approach that we do it. I particularly, and because I'm a strong advocate for what we do in terms of sport education, I feel, even though Mintzberg, Henry Mintzberg in the management realm spoke about the importance of managers learning from experience rather than going and doing MBAs, but I think we have a stronger possibility in our sport education to providing a more of an experience-based education. I know you're a strong advocate, and you're actually quite hands-on on doing this. Can you tell us a little bit about how, what kind of experiences you generate to enhance that learning, enhance those leadership skills with students?
Yeah, okay. So this is probably where we move into the space of outdoor education as well, right? Like we, and you, um, Yeah, so I mean, there's roles there of adapting your teaching into a more of a practical sense, so it becomes more of a realistic kind of timeline, you know, so for people to be able to reflect on. And inside, so one of the papers that I run that I'm really passionate about, I'm really excited about, is the outdoor education space, you know, and because it's hugely empowering to be able to see these students that have no concept of the outdoors and no inclination to even be, you know, to pick it up as a career, and that's fine. But I teach this paper on outdoor education because what I see in students, I see the development of their being able to learn by doing a lot of experiences, you know. So because inside the outdoor space, we teach a lot of soft skills, like leadership skills, to be able to enhance their learning by, you know, even by going into the bush, you can take that classroom environment out into the outdoors, and it becomes a different environment. It becomes a teaching environment that doesn't have any walls. It doesn't have any four walls and a roof. It has a, you know, you got a bush, and now you got this cool learning environment. And what can we do? You know, and inside the bush, man, I'll teach nutrition in the bush. Yeah. One of my papers that I teach as well is nutrition. I'll go into the bush and go, man, cool. Look at this, man. This is a kawakawa. This is for, you know, medicinal purposes. And Māori used to take this, you know, and use this as Māori medicine. And so, and when we learn about trees, we learn about the bush, we learn about some survival skills. And, you know, it's really cool. It's just seeing the, you know, some of that light bulbs coming off, and the students going, wow, man, this is cool, you know. And then what's also really, really special to me too is that even years after, I get photos and Facebook photos of students taking their kids to these places too, you know, and be able to be there. So then therefore they become a mentor for these students, even though they want to be something completely different in their career. Like, not a lot of our students may not even come through and be outdoor instructors. We've had a few, but you know, the outdoor environment is something that I think it's really cool. And I think just the ability to be able to implement some scenario based learning. When I was doing sport management, we're talking about the planning, you know, leading, organizing, controlling the model. You know, the flock, and, you know, in terms of the four functions of management. It was cool to take some of those outdoor kind of activities and bring them into the classroom, and then we created this cool scenario where they had to, you know, get this egg, and they had to make a capture around this egg, and then they drop it from a height, you know, and then what it became from there was a cool learning environment by a fun activity. And then in reflection, because reflection is a huge part of the learning as well, is that what did we do? Okay, for them, it might have been without the reflection, it becomes all we've done is made this capture around the egg and dropped it, and then we smashed. Or not. Okay, but with the reflection, it became like, man, this is what we've done. We plan the activity first. We organize the resources to go into making this. There was a leader amongst the group who was the leader, and we had the conversation around leadership around there too. And then right at the end, we controlled it by reflecting on that activity. So you can, like, there's plenty of cool activities that you can take in terms of the outdoor space and bring them into the classrooms, where you don't have to worry about the four walls. It doesn't have to be a whiteboard in front of the room, right? It doesn't have to be a PowerPoint in front of the room for you to learn stuff. Encourage dialogue between groups and sit back. And I think it's really cool, inspiring. Thing about what I enjoy about leadership too, I enjoy just creating a scene and then sitting back and then watching cool things happen sometimes. Of course, it doesn't always happen like that. Sometimes you need to step up and kind of push people along, but it's cool to be able to create the environment, be able to sit back and then watch cool things happen amongst the group, and then get the reflection and then go, cool. And then they go, man, that was an awesome class, where really all you've done is really create a scene for it.
You know,
and if the scene's right, then the learning happens in any space.
Now, this is really interesting to listen to. I mean, we talk about it all the time, but I can imagine for our listeners, because we're coming from a tertiary setting, And we're in a tertiary setting because we work in this field of sport education. We're talking so strongly about that scenario-based learning, that experiential-based learning, where we're setting the scene and we're letting a lot of reflection come into to play in regards to the learning. But at the end, I think what the key here that we want to try to highlight is the whole concept of those development of soft skills that are transferable to different types of vocations moving forward, because by creating those scenes, by taking them to the outdoors, and like you say, I completely agree with you, outdoors might not be the career, you know, an outdoor instructor might not be the career, but the experience of going through outdoor education can develop such a strong set of soft skills that will be completely transferable to so many different other vocations that they can carry forward. And I completely agree with you with that whole set of that planning, execution, and reflection, or looking at it from the point of view of the four functions of management. The outdoor education allows you to do all that. It allows you to create a real laboratory in the outdoors, where you're actually putting now humans to develop and explore those soft skills.
Yeah, that's what I love, eh? Human labyrinths.
Well, I'm not sure that sounds really good, but that's it's incredible. And I think many times when people look at at education and that strong value of that sport education, it's seen as fun and games. And a lot of people that come into our terrain here are thinking, oh, I don't want to study sports, kids, fun and games. But the added self-knowledge and soft skills is tremendous.
Yeah, it's huge. But I think it comes back to that, what I was saying before about learning about yourself and who you are as a person, like learning about your identity, which is hugely important, you know, for kids who don't get time to reflect on who they are. And, you know, even thinking back to the classroom, we know our older adults are, you know, much more reflective than kids, because kids don't reflect. They don't develop the skills to reflect until you later on, unless you've been kind of, you know, unless that's part of your co-pathway at school or part of your education at school. And it doesn't seem to be, there's not a huge lot of reflection going on by teenagers. So we find, you know, unless that environment's been necessarily purposely created for them. You know, in the outdoor space, what I enjoy is that there's that, you know, we've all heard of that comfort zone, right?
Yeah.
Like, we all sit in our comfort zone. It's a nice, comfortable place to be. You put someone in the outdoors, straight away, you're kind of pushing environments where people are going, I've never been in this place before. We'll take students down to Hanua, which is like a 20-minute drive, still in Auckland, and we've got students going, I've never been out of Auckland before. But it's still, yeah, we're still in the same city, because the students are so, some people just don't haven't had the opportunity or the opportunity to get out into the bush and be able to try things. It's for many reasons, you know. So the cool thing about the outdoors is that we get the chance to push people into their stretch zone, you know.
Yep.
So we've got that comfort zone, and then we've got that stretch zone. So the stretch zone is really cool, because the stretch zone is people stepping out of their comfort zone. And for some people, this might be to sit in the kayak. It might be way out of the comfort zone.
Yeah.
For some people, it might be that hit the big waves in the kayak. That might be a little bit more out of their comfort zone, right? So if we get the chance to be able to put people in their comfort zone, regardless of where that is, and it's my job as an educator in the outdoors to be able to find what it is for a lot of people and be able to offer experiences that accommodate that in a safe space, to get people to experience that, then they get the chance to learn more about themselves in a different space, in a different environment. They come away so empowered, man. Like okay. just to kind of walk away from an experience to go far out. That was awesome, you know. And that was a cool experience. Or man, I didn't know I could do that. I'm so proud of myself, you know. And that's really cool thing to hear. And I think once people get into that they'll have the opportunity to be able to learn more about themselves. I think that's when some cool stuff happens, right? And especially in their stretch zone. Beyond their stretch zone, that ugly panic zone, right? Like people, you know, get into their panic zone where they're, you know, they reach lengths way beyond their confidence. And it might, some people might be their fitness levels, it might be their skill levels or whatever. So my role would be to really put them in their safe space where they learn about themselves, learn about the outdoors, get a good experience, some good education, and develop the soft skills that we've been speaking about. You know, the leadership, the resilience, the communication, the confidence, the identity, empathy, you know, all those cool things that we can replicate in the outdoors by putting people in group situations, by putting people in problem solving situations where they have to, where they have to come up with a decision to make something or to do something, you know. And then my role from there, if I set the scene, is to step back.
Yeah.
You know, let them do it. Let them have their space. Let them work amongst their own space and then their own, you know, groups to be able to develop something cool.
And in that sense, especially these past 2 years, whether it's us, especially here in New Zealand, during the second semester in this year, but in other parts of the world all through 2020, what you're explaining and setting these scenes and being able to get these experiential learnings and these soft skills through learning has been absolutely challenged through lockdowns and COVID. And one of the things in the conversations I've been having is that when we're reconnecting with education, it's all been about academics and academic compliance, fulfilling the assessment requirements, having students complete the compliance bit of education. And the compliance bit of education is that black and white side of education. And it's not covering that social, emotional, reflective learning necessarily, or those environments that are social and emotional that education has, which you're talking about that stretch zone. That's been left aside a bit in regards to education in the current COVID situations. Learning that from the experience over the past 2 years, where do you think we need to go in terms of education, in terms of being able to continue to generate those soft skills in a changing environment, in an environment now that students know that the black and white compliance side of academics and learning can be fulfilled online, which is what we've experienced, but understanding that higher value of the soft skills that can be achieved through the experiential. How do we blend it all together? I mean, I'm not sure if you've thought about it. We haven't conversed to this before, but this is something I've been dwelling about quite a bit over the past few weeks in regards to, we've taken away that social aspect. We've taken away that aspect of, you know what, let's muck around in the classroom because that's fun. And there's some learning, experiential learning that comes out of that, or that scene that you're setting as a lecturer for students, for them to trial it and explore and get the soft learning from there. That's been taken away, that social interaction.
Yeah, sure is. Yeah, and it may, the reality of it is we're in the space that we are now, and there's no getting out of it until we're allowed to be back out of space. So you're right, the social aspect's gone, the assessment stuff is priority number one at this stage, which doesn't give offer that the same soft skill development there you'd find in the outdoors, and it's 100% correct. What that would look like in the space in terms of developing, it's a hard one to come up with, but I think a lot of the learning can still come to a point of fruition, up to a certain level. I think maybe with the development of like a virtual space or trying to be put out of your comfort zone in your own realm. I think it's kind of a hard one to kind of determine where this could possibly end up. I think creating scenarios to put people into, give them the space to be able to develop themselves is probably the more space that we can go. But it's a kind of a you can maybe look at the Yeah, I suppose looking at the reflection tools to be able to look at some stuff that's happened in the past, to be able to reflect on that might give people a sense of how to develop that moving forward. Yeah, it's a hard one to go on. Unfortunately, my outdoor paper doesn't run this semester, so I haven't had to kind of work on the development of the soft skill development outside in this environment.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's actually been real lucky, to tell you the truth, because it is hard. I mean, because education, especially this semester, has been pushed more to an isolated individual approach, an individual reflection, rather than that connection with others. I suppose maybe just the doing things by analogy. You know, it's like, okay, Daz, you went out for a walk around your reserve close to your house, and I did mine. What did you see? It was more of an analogy kind of thing, but but again, it's different. It's different, and that's, I guess, the challenge from our educational perspective, to try to continue to deliver,
yeah,
and promote that same personal development within the changing space.
And I've seen, and what we've seen through the lockdown and in this environment too, we've seen IT stepping up and bridging more of their gap to be able to become more efficient in terms of creating more realistic kind of roles as well. You know, so maybe the space of like a virtual reality or something like that. Like, you know, for those who have access to technology like that, who knows? There might be where we could be looking at in the future. But yeah, I think it's more at the stage would be more of a what do you do and reflection type tools there to maybe help develop some of that until we get out of the space and then we're back into the real world, right?
I'm actually going to do a call out for anybody in the technology industry that might be listening to this, because I think you just hit on something really cool. Creating some kind of virtual reality tool to replicate, like, remember like those storybooks that we would read when we were kids, that you could actually choose the endings. So if you think this is going to happen, you go to page 24. And if you think this is going to happen, go to page 28, and you kept on changing the way that the book was finishing. So imagine having a tool like that for experiential learning experiences through a virtual reality, especially in that outdoor space, would be very cool. Very, very cool. And in the way that we're going, I mean, it would be really cool to get the connection from a technology space to actually be able to do something like that.
Yeah. Well, you see technology is coming more to the front, right? And it's a big thing. And you see like different platforms stepping up and, you know, bridge the gap in this new world. Who knows how long this is going to go on for and when it's going to be back, to be honest.
Yeah, and it also, I mean, like you say, it does bring the world a whole lot closer. Up until a few years ago, I mean, we were just a flight away from going anywhere and discovering, like your experience through Camp America, just give you a different horizon. But probably now we need to bridge that gap. Looking at different tools and technology could be a huge advancement. From that point of view, you've been around the education space for a while. Just in regards to developing skills of our athletes and looking at technology, where do you think have been the major shifts in terms of our student learning in regards to technology over these years and that incorporation of technology into our sports space? And I know you're working mostly on the outdoors, but even in that space, hey, where that shift has been?
Technology has been huge in our industry, right? Like we've seen changes in sport and sport fields, in the professional game to sport analysis and that era as well. We've seen more shift in terms of GPS movement with sport. And in terms of the teaching space, we've seen more platforms like the Dartfish, the Game Breaker and those kind of tools coming before to help analyze the game. And now we've seen, you know, everything on TV, we're closer to the action. Like this morning, I got up because I couldn't sleep at 5 o'clock this morning to watch the second part of the cricket, right? And you can hear everything. You can, if the batter coughed, you'll be able to hear it. Like you feel like you're so close to the action. You know, in West America's Cup, you feel like you're on the boat. You know, almost like you, you know. So I think, well, technology is huge, and it's been a big driver for many industries to be able to bring us closer to the game, to make us feel like part of the, you know, like the investment, because we everyone invests in sport for a reason. And it's an entertainment package, 100%. The recreation side of things, you know, it's like, what's in it for me? And I think we, as a consumer of recreational sport, we all after, you know, what's in it for me? How can I get value for money? And I think technology is a big way of bringing us closer to that. You know, whether it's an online platform to be able to watch it on TV or GPS to make us, you know, to be able to analyze the games a bit more, whether it's even a, you know, even it's a timing lights to be able to assess, you know, how fast you can run, or, you know, technology is a massive thing in the industry of sport and recreation and exercise. Because I think people want to see more value for money in terms of what they can get out of it. You go to the gyms now and you can see, you know, all the machines now are electronic. There's all, you know, everything's monitoring everything, you know. So, you know, you've got entertainment on the wall, and you got boot classes, you know, classes, boot camps that are operating all the time. And I think, yeah, so I think technology is a huge push for, in this industry, and it's a big thing of being able to make us feel closer to the action. But yeah, so I think it's a big one.
And it's important as well for us to connect our students to this technology, and that curiosity of the use and the new possible technology that they could access to create that, what you're explaining to us, that closeness to that activity, and that's a really cool discovery space, especially from our applied education point of view, how understanding how we want to be and how people want to be closer to the sport, whether it's from that recreational space, the competition space, how that can just spike the curiosity. And you don't know what students we have today, what they might be working on or developing or working with in 5-6 years time, because of that curiosity that it generated of understanding how technology brings us closer to the action at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly right. So I think it's like the influence for students, it's massive, you know, like technology throughout the you know, develop like programs like Zoom and Teams, you know, to be able to. One thing lockdown has taught us, I think, is that you know, there's industries that can probably potentially not have to go back to the office. They can literally survive, if not thrive, in an online environment. So, yeah. You know, and this environment's given us a chance to be able to look at that. And the sports, for the sports industry, has done exactly the same, because I know groups that have set up online platforms and they're still operating from last year's lockdown, and they're still going, and they're building these big enterprises because they're developing online wake-up calls, and they're doing Zoom classes, you know, 2 or 3 times a day. And then gaining membership that way. So the industry is changing, and I think as an industry, we have to be in a position to be able to be ready to adapt to that change. Because one of the questions that was come out last night is like, oh, cool, so where do we go from here with the industry? And it's like, wow, man, we don't even know what an industry is going to look like at this stage until we come out of lockdown. Now, that was a question last year, right? Until we've done a lot of reflection to decide where we're going with this. And then it was a case of, cool, how do we adapt to this? How do we prepare our students to be able to adapt to this changing environment and climate? Because we really didn't know where, you know, where things were heading, and we can't wait for students to be able to go, oh, I'll wait till the gym's open before I start my work experience, right? Because your gym may not open.
Exactly.
That's the reality of it, right?
Exactly.
Because people are changing. People, you know, the environment might be changing, and it's, I think we just have to be ready to adapt to that.
Yeah, I've seen that in the coaching space. Coaching, I mean, many times you have those review sessions in coaching in the team environments. Well, you don't necessarily have to have them, those review sessions, anymore in a common room. You could just have them in the same space that we're talking today. And those barriers have actually come down, that we could probably do a lot more things online now as a general population after these last couple of years. And that's been on the enhancement of technology. And you know, like you're saying, that training space has really benefited in terms of overhead costs, to tell you the truth, thanks to the pandemic. So it is a change. It is definitely a changing environment. A changing environment that I like. We were talking at the beginning of the conversation that understanding the experiences, understanding the options that are in front of you better, allows you to be a little bit more better prepared to take on whatever opportunities come on in the future.
Yeah, exactly. There's I think understanding your opportunities, where you're going to go, and you know, the thing is about the sports industry is that it's changing so much. You can develop, you know, I think I alluded to a little while ago, is that you can develop a lot of the soft skills that go into the industry. And to be honest, a lot of people get into the industry and don't have no idea where they want to go. No idea, but they know it's in the sport area. They know it's in the sport environment. They know it's working with people. They know it's not in the office, and they just want to make a career out of it, which is fantastic. Well, you know, and we've seen students going straight from our degree into work experience and going far out. I have no idea this is even here. You know, like this is an opportunity that I've got to capitalize on, and we've seen students going into their game video analysis space. They have no idea what's out there in the beginning. So yeah, I think this has given us the opportunity to kind of think about what's out there to be able to develop, give students the opportunity to see what's out there by exposing them to different facets of the industry. And that's why we've been so instrumental in terms of developing programs that are going to cover as much of the industry as possible, to be honest. Because we know. And we've always been like that in terms of the philosophy at MIT, is about what are students wanting to see, and what can we offer them, you know, chance to. And then we started way back from our certificate. You know, years ago, we just gave literally a smorgasbord of the industry, and those students would go far out. I wanted to be a personal trainer, but now I want to get into the outdoors. Okay. I want to get into the outdoors, but now, man, now it's cool, but I also love coaching. You know, if we can provide the space for people to get into the, even if you had no idea that you want to get into the sports industry, to be able to sit into the program and keep your eyes open, there's heaps of opportunity out there. And there's plenty of branches that come off the industry that are bracketed in the sport, recreation, mixed side, and outdoors industry. And they all require the same skills, similar skills, you know, the similar soft skills. Beyond the technical expertise of, you know, which comes with each one.
I agree. Well, we're all very strong advocates of the transferable skills that you get through the practical nature of sports education. And again, in our philosophy at MIT, at the School of Sport, is quite strong in regards to enhancing that practical experience nature of the learning, whether it is through our direct contact with the students in our classroom environments or our teaching environments, or is it through the connections through industry stakeholders that can help provide those experiences for the students. I think we were seeing something this morning, which looks to be very, very exciting for 2022 in regards to generating a new space and a growing space, and especially with a push to more equality and inclusion of people with different capacities, it's a great new avenue for our own students to experience.
And to be able to kind of have that space with to be able to develop their learning is awesome.
Des, plans, expectations for next year?
Oh, cool. Get through this year.
Get through this.
That's my plan. But for next year, I really want to get this outdoor program off the off, to be able to develop it to the next level. I want to create new networks with industries. So I'm in my second year of my te reo study. I've always wanted to learn te reo, right? I've always wanted to learn how to speak my unfortunately my mum's from Taheke, which is up north. My dad's from I think he's from Taranaki. He's one of those, yeah, we're not really too sure. He's one of those lost 90s. But we're tracking him down. But I've always felt strong roots to my Māori side, and I've always wanted to speak. So I'm on my second year of studies, my third year, hopefully my fingers crossed I'll get into the third year of studies next year, but that all really comes down to whether I can, whether we can get through this this year. So that's my plan, to do my PD, because I've always wanted to kind of develop that into the next level. My plan is to be involved in more into my son's schooling, into a certain capacity, get on some committees and around schools and stuff like that. Because I've spent a lot of time being really selfish and looking after my own studies, so I better put something back into my kids.
fair enough. I'm excited. I'm really excited. Well, I've been seeing your Tadeo journey over the past couple of years, and that's really exciting, and you know, it rubs off. And I get bugged here at home. You know, I have no Māori background, but I use Māori terminology in my everyday speech around Kai and Fano, and sometimes I get bugged by my own kids because they go like, "Where are you coming from? You got no Māori in you." But it's just I think it just rubs off because of the environment that we're in, and I think that your influence of your journey actually has rubbed off a bit on me in regards that you started to use more te reo in your in your everyday, which is cool, which is really, really cool. I'm really also excited to see the next stage of growth in the outdoor education space for your cohorts. I think there's a huge, huge opportunity in regards to leadership. I'll call it leadership training. I'm not sure if you're comfortable with that, but in regards to leadership training for the next generation of tertiary students, especially for us at Manukau Institute of Technology, I'm really excited. I'm really tempted to see how that all is going to turn out moving into 2022, 2023 with regards to the growth of leadership training through outdoors education at MIT. I'm really excited to see how that turns out because I believe in it, and I know that you do it with tremendous passion, and you get such tremendous results of growth and soft skills and personal development from the students. So Daryl, it's been an absolute pleasure to have kind of a formalish conversation. Our conversations are usually not this formal as today. But it's been awesome to have a conversation on a little bit more concise topics than our usual kind of muck around fluff conversations that end up being very deep, but a little bit more casual. So thanks a lot for coming on board this the paddock this week.
Oh, you're welcome, Frank. Cool. Thanks for having me, man.
Well, if anybody wants to get in touch with Daryl at Manukau Institute of Technology School of Sports, or if you're interested in outdoor education and how to implement it, how to get most growth out of your own students, if you're a student yourself and you want to find out more, or you're an MIT student and you want to find out more about how you can actually get this growth, this leadership growth and this leadership training through outdoor education, contact Daryl. His email is right below him. Just send him an email. He'll be happy to answer with regards to outdoor education, leadership, and educational leadership altogether. Please subscribe, like, share, do all that fun stuff with this podcast. We'll be back next week with another interesting conversation from the field of sport education and leadership on the paddock. So please share, like, subscribe, do all that fun stuff, and we'll see you next week. Take care, guys.